Good morning. And for our last lecture, I'll be discussing the gamma, zeta, and hypergeometric functions. And so the theme of today's lecture is going to be infinite series and infinite products. We'll be dealing a lot with those today. So let's start with the gamma function. So the way that the gamma function arises as a generalization of the factorial. So we have n factorial. We know that that's equal to n times n minus 1 factorial. And we'd like to be able to extend this function to the real numbers and the complex numbers. And so how can we do that? So this, it's not enough just to demand that the function matches the factorial on the integers. And that's because we can always add a function like sine of pi x, which is 0 on all the integers, to any analytic function we have. So we need to demand that such a function, which I'll call gamma of z, obeys this property, z plus 1 is equal to z times gamma of z. So if we demand that this holds not just on the integers, but for all complex numbers z, then we can get a unique function. And so how can we do this? And so I believe it was Euler came up with the definition that gamma of z is equal to the integral from 0 to infinity. Here? Right, so gamma, so this is going to play the role of n factorial. So what we're going to show is that gamma of n plus 1 is equal to n factorial. And so that's then equal to n times n minus 1 factorial, which is equal to n times gamma of n. And so if we just replace this n with a z, then we get this equation. Okay, and so returning to our integral definition, defined to be t to the z minus 1, e to the minus t, dt. Okay, and let's just take a minute. So this is defined for the real part of z positive. So let's take a minute and show that this has the desired property. Okay, so we can just take a look at the function t to the z times e to the minus t. And if we take a z derivative of this, we just get z t to the z minus 1 e to the minus t minus t to the z e to the minus. Sorry, we want to take a t derivative, not a z derivative. Okay. And then we can integrate this from 0 to infinity. And here we get t to the z minus t. So we can pull the z out. Yes. Sorry. just, yeah, evaluate that at the boundaries. So this gives us just this evaluated at the boundaries, which is 0 at 0 and also 0 at infinity. So over here we get 0 is equal to, this is just z times gamma of z. And over here we have minus gamma of z plus 1. So we just rearrange this, we get the functional equation that we wanted. It relates z plus gamma of z plus 1 to z times gamma of z. Okay, so this is great. We've got a function that extends the factorials on the, as long as the positive real part is greater than 0. What about if the real part of z is less than 0? So we'd like to be able to extend this function to the entire complex plane. And we can do that just by using our functional equation. So we know that gamma, we can write gamma of z, we just rewrite this functional equation, it's equal to gamma of z plus n over z plus 1 up through z plus n minus 1. So this just comes from repeated application of our functional equation. And if we then demand that the real part of z plus n, where n is an integer, is greater than 0, then we know how to define this the right-hand side of this equation, and we can just take that as a definition of gamma of z for the real part of z less than 0. Okay? So with this construction, we now have a generalization of the factorial function to the entire complex plane. Now let's look at the poles of this function. So let's let z equal minus some natural number plus epsilon. And then we can use this equation here to say that gamma, or we're going to take epsilon to be some small positive number. So then gamma of z plus epsilon, same as gamma of z, is equal to, using this equation up here, gamma of 1 plus epsilon over gamma of z, which is epsilon minus n times epsilon minus n plus 1, all the way down to epsilon. That's the first positive one. Yes. So we have that condition just so that the integral up there converges. So if we had the real part of z less than 0, then the integrand would diverge at as t goes to 0. And the integral, in fact, would diverge. So that's where that condition comes from. So and we can look at this right-hand side in the limit that epsilon goes to 0. And so these first n terms just collapse to be the factorial function, except we have a minus sign. So this is equal to minus 1 to the n over n factorial. But we're left with an epsilon over here.
Where did the 1 come from?
So we just want, so we want to relate gamma of z, which is, we're trying to look at this at negative integers.
Yeah.
So we know how to define gamma as long as the argument is positive. So we just want to choose, so in this equation, we just choose n so that this argument is positive, and then we know how to define gamma. And so in this case, if we just choose so I use the same n here, but the, we could say that if this one is m, then we want just to have m equal n plus 1. So we get some positive number here. OK. So and gamma of 1 is equal to 1. So this is just what gamma of z is at the negative integers. And so that tells us that we have simple poles. With residue minus 1 to the n over n factorial at the negative integers.
Excuse me, what n do we, what z do we substitute in that formula?
Here?
Yeah.
So we're plugging in. Let me change this one to m just so using different variables. So in this equation, so we're plugging in z is equal to minus some integer, positive integer, plus epsilon. So there's plus epsilon here, which as we take the limit to 0, doesn't matter. And then we are here choosing m is equal to n plus 1. So if we make, plug these two values in this equation up here, we get this formula.
One question, but the residue shouldn't be at m minus 1?
So so this left-hand side is just gamma of z, which is gamma of minus n. So at the negative integers, we get, so as we get close to them, we have basically, if we're within epsilon, it diverges like 1 over epsilon. So that tells us we have a simple pole at these minus negative integers with this residue.
So this expression, gamma of z or gamma of z plus epsilon?
Well, we're taking the limit as epsilon goes to 0. I want to be precise. This one should, we're just taking epsilon to be some infinitesimally small number. So if you just think of it that way, then and this is precise. These two are the same if epsilon is infinitesimal. Does that answer your question?
But should then the condition not be z plus a real part of z plus n plus 1 should be greater than 0?
Yes. So that's so epsilon is some infinitesimal.
Yeah, I mean, in, ah, yeah.
M, right, m. Yes, I changed.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I mean, plus 1.
Plus 1.
Otherwise, your argument would be could be between 0 and 1.
That's okay. It's okay if it's between 0 and 1. We know how to, so our original definition of gamma, that integral converges
then
as long
works,
as
yeah.
Real part is positive.
Yeah.
So So in practice, this integral definition comes up a lot in physics, and you can do various changes of variables on that definition. You can get all different integral representations for gamma, which you'll have some practice with in your tutorial this afternoon. But it's also, to prove some of the other properties of gamma, it's useful to look at some other ways to define it. And so let's look at another definition of gamma. Okay, so let's define a function gamma sub p of x. So I'm just, for most of the rest of my discussion, I'm just going to deal with gamma at on the real line. You can always relate what I'm doing. Most of what I'm doing here will falls over if it has a complex argument, but the convergence argument's a little trickier. So just to avoid that, I'll deal with gamma at real values for now. So we can make another definition. So we can define this to be p factorial times p to the x over x times x plus 1 times x plus p, or equivalently, both forms will be useful at some point. We can just write this factorial, first the 1 here and the 1 half here, so that we get x times x plus x over 1 plus 1 over x times 1 plus x over 2 times 1 plus x over p. So we've just divided the ith term by the down here by the ith term here. Okay, and so this function is related to gamma in the limit that p goes to infinity. Okay, and to see that, we note that gamma p of 1 is equal to, we'll just plug in a 1 here in this one. We get, it's probably easier to see it in this one. So then we have p factorial. Down here we have p factorial for the first terms, plus we have a 1 plus p left over. So that gives us 1 plus p from this part, and then we have a p to the 1. And so in the limit that p goes to infinity, this is just 1, which agrees with our definition of gamma before. And it also has the property that gamma p of x plus 1 is equal to p over x plus p plus 1. So this p just comes from, if we have a p to the x versus a p to the x plus 1, we have an extra factor of p. And we have one extra term in the bottom times x gamma p of x. So again, in the limit that p goes to infinity, this agrees with our definition of gamma before. Okay, so now we can use this new definition of gamma to define a more useful form. So let's take the form on the right-hand side, the far right, and rearrange it a bit. So we can write p to the x as e to the x log p. And then I'm going to multiply and divide by a series. So if I write this as x times log p minus 1 minus 1 half minus up to minus 1 over p. And then I can cancel off the terms I just multiplied by. So we have an x plus x over 2 plus x over p. Okay. So this is just an identity. And we can see that if we plug this into our formula for gamma p of x, we have still, we didn't touch the denominator. So we have the 1 over x times 1 over x plus 1 up through 1 over, sorry, 2 over x. Let's use the one on the left. Speed of the x. And we can use our expression for p of the x in here. 1 over x, 2 over x plus 1, through p over x plus p, times e to the x log p, minus 1, minus 1 half, minus 1 over p, times this. OK. Now, this seems like a lot of manipulations at this point. But then we can note that this term here.
Add that.
Yes?
Just in your coefficient before p of x. Like if you just replace p by 2, for example, you get 2 over x plus 2, and you don't have that. So is there a term that's left out? Or?
Sorry, this one should have been a 1.
Okay.
Yes. Thank you. Should have been a 1. Sorry. Yes. So this is this is correct now. Okay. So this factor here is what's known as Euler's constant. So Euler's constant, gamma, is defined to be the limit as p goes to infinity of 1 plus 1 half plus through 1 over p. And it has the numerical value 0.57721, et cetera. So if we write it like this, then we can actually write it in a much nicer form. So let's look at 1 over gamma of x, which is
You're missing logarithm in the definition of gamma.
Yes. It should be a minus. Minus log of p. Thank you. Okay. So this is equal to the limit as p goes to infinity of 1 over gamma p of x, which we just rewrite we have above. We have an x out front, which I'll keep separately. So this term is here is e to the gamma x, so e to the minus gamma x. So here we have an e to the x. And then we have a product from p equals 1 to infinity of 1 plus x over p. So that's these terms. And then we're left here with a product of e to the minus x over p. And so this is known as the Weierstrass formula.
There should be additional gamma in the first exponent branch.
Yes. Thank you. Weierstrass. And so what have we learned from this? So first of all, we can see that this expression, so from this expression, we can see that gamma has no zeros at all. So the only time any of the factors are zero is if x is equal to a negative integer. We already know that gamma has poles at those points. So those are not actually zero. We don't even need to worry about taking the limit there. So this tells us that gamma of x has no zeros. So it's meromorphic. And we also learned from this that on the real line, gamma of x is greater than 0 for x greater than 0. All these factors are explicitly positive here.
Why is it obvious that a product is never infinite?
Why is this never infinite?
Yep.
Okay, so to... Well, it is at the negative integers. It's infinite.
Negative integer is 0.
It's 0, sorry. Zero.
Why does gamma have no zeros?
Zeros.
Why the product is never infinite?
Why the product is never infinite? That's okay. So.
Well, if you fix x, then seems reasonable that it.
Right. I mean, the only way you can really get infinity over here is if you take the limit that x goes to infinity. For finite x, then.
You mean that the exponential always kills it?
Basically, this term is always just going to.
Well, this term only goes to 1, right? The exponential.
The exponential goes.
Right. So this goes to 1, but this also will go to 1. So. And. So, right.
I think the product of 1 plus x over p and e to that thing is smaller than 1.
Is smaller than 1. It's not this product.
It depends on it.
Depends on what x is. Yeah. Sometimes. But it's.
For small p, probably yes.
Right. Okay.
Small p.
So from this formula, we can get the complement formula. Correctly? So we can look at the product 1 over gamma of x times 1 over gamma of minus x. We write this as an product using the Weierstrass form. We just get 1 over minus x squared e to the gamma x. E to the minus gamma x, one with each sign from the two gammas up front. Then we have the product p equals 1 to infinity of 1 plus x over p e to the minus x over p times 1 minus x over p e to the x over p. Okay. So see, there's a lot of cancellation here. These two terms cancel. These two terms cancel. And we're left with, so we can write the left-hand side as 1 over gamma of x. We can use our definition of gamma to write this as gamma of 1 minus x times over minus x. So this is just our functional equation. And over here, we have an x squared. And we're left with a product from p equals 1 to infinity of 1 minus x over p squared.
So why did you have the minus the x?
Here?
Yeah.
I added an extra x because, in fact, this infinite product, so I'm going to show you in a minute, has a particularly simple form.
Yeah, but if you multiply it by x,
this?
The right-hand side is the same as previously.
The right-hand side is the same as previously. So over here, what I used is gamma.
Oh, this one minus x.
Of,
no, I didn't notice.
Yes. Yes.
Why you can mix the two infinite products to get one?
Okay, so here I'm using, and I'll be using similar things throughout the lecture. So if the limit of as n goes to infinity of an bn is equal to the limit as n goes to infinity of an times the limit as n goes to infinity of bn. So this is true as long as both of these limits exist and are finite individually. So if both of these limits exist. So if either of these is infinite, then we have to worry about this. But in the case where these are both finite, then it's okay. And so both of these infinite products are just this 1 over gamma, which is finite. Okay. So then we can simplify the right-hand side. And so the right on the right-hand side, we have x times the product of 1 minus x squared, p squared. And so what is this function? It looks like a function that's 0 at 0, 0 at plus or minus 1, and 0 at basically all of the integers. So this is equal to 0 at x and z. So in fact, we know a function like that. And that's just sine of pi x. So that's a function that has no zeros, no poles, and zeros only at the integers. So if both of these functions are analytic, then they have to be related.
Why is it zero?
So if we plug in, say, x equals 0, this term is 0. Plug in x equals 1.
Oh, yeah,
this is product from equals to infinity. So one of these factors will be 0 for any integer. And so it turns out that in fact, these two are the same. It can be shown more rigorously, but it should be at least plausible that this is just up to a pi the same as this product here. I don't want to go into a formal proof because that would take the rest, most of the rest of the lecture. But should be at least plausible. Okay. So, if we then plug this into our equation up there, we get that 1 over gamma of x times gamma of 1 minus x is equal to sine of pi x over pi. Or we can rewrite this taking the reciprocal of both sides as the complement formula. This is known as the complement. So what does this tell us? In particular, with these two formulas and our knowledge of the gamma function on positive on the natural numbers, we can sketch reasonably accurately gamma of x versus x for x real. So we know that for x greater than 1, it should just look like a function that interpolates between the factorials. This is 1 2, so that should be 2. 1. It has poles at 0 and negative integers. That should go to infinity here. And then if we use the complement formula, we can see that it has to alternate signs on intervals of 1. So in this interval, it's going to be negative. So it'll look something like this. And over here, it has to be positive. If we use this formula together with the functional equation, that's poles at these points. And it'll get closer and closer to 0 the farther out we go. So that's roughly what the gamma function looks like on the real numbers. Okay. So there's one other very useful formula for the gamma functions. And that's the duplication formula. So duplication formula. Is the gamma of x times gamma of x plus a half equal to square root of pi over 2 to the 2x minus 1 times gamma of 2x. And we can show this using the gamma of p in the limit that p goes to 0. And so gamma p of x. So let's just look at each side of this equation. So this is equal as p goes to infinity of this. It's equal to the limit as p goes to infinity of p to the x. Factorial for x plus 1 for x plus p times p to the x plus a half p factorial for x plus a half x plus 3 halves times x plus p plus a half. And look at the other side of the equation, and gamma of 2x is equal to the limit p goes to infinity. And now we can make a choice. So instead of using p in our formula, we can use 2p. So if we take the limit as p goes to infinity, it doesn't matter if p is odd or even. So we can plug 2p into our formula for gamma p. And then we get this formula. And over here, we also have the square root of pi, which from this formula, if we plug in gamma x equals a half, we see that the gamma of 1 half times gamma of 1 half is equal to pi over the sine of pi over 2 which is equal to pi. So gamma of 1/2 is equal to the square root of pi. And so then we can also use our gamma p representation to for gamma of 1/2. Gamma of 1/2 is equal to the limit as p goes to infinity of p to the 1/2 p factorial over 1/2 times 3/2 all the way up to p plus 1/2. And so now we have four terms, and we can take, let's take the ratio gamma of 2x, gamma of 1/2 over gamma of x, gamma of x plus 1/2. So that's equal to the limit as p goes to infinity of, we have here 2p factorial, 2 to the 2x times p to the 2x. We also get 1/2 from this one and a p factorial.
Why do you have for gamma 2x
the 2p factors? So I claimed that it doesn't matter if we take the limit as p goes to.
Okay, but if you combine it with the other gammas, you use the same piece then. So it doesn't matter in that.
Again, I'm using this fact that the product, the limit of the product of the terms is equal to the product of the limit, as long as each of the limits converges. Okay, so we get these factors. I'll deal with the numerator in a minute, and also let's deal with the numerator of these terms. So here we get p factorial from each of them, and we get a p to the 2x plus 1/2. Also, if we combine the numerators of these two terms. And then we have the infinite product part. So we have x. So from these two, we have x times x plus 1 up through x plus p. We have x plus 1/2 up through x plus p plus 1/2. This is times. Divided by numerators of these two, denominators of those two, gives us 2x, 2x plus 1, 2x plus p, 1/2. Up through p plus 1/2. And we see that there's a lot of cancellation that goes on here. So first of all, this cancels. This cancels with one of these factors. We also have so this term here is equal to 2 times 4 up through 2p. So I'll pull the 2 to the 2x up front. Down here we have a one up through p. And so this part is equal to, this is just twice, numerator is twice the denominator for.
Where is the odd factors from the factor?
Yes. I'm going to separate those out. So 1 times 3, 2p plus 1. So this is equal then to okay, so let's also put these terms here. So one half, 3/2 times p plus 1/2. So those terms, so if we're basically just taking out everything that doesn't involve x in this term. So everything that doesn't depend on x we'll call ap, and everything that does depend on x is equal to. It's equal to the product of ap times bp that does depend on x. Everything that doesn't depend on x is here. And this is just equal to, so here we get 2 to the p from this. And over here, we get 2 to the p again. That's 2 to the 2p. We have this one factor left over. Two p plus one.
Isn't it the one additional two? Number of twos from the second. Suppose.
From the second one?
Yeah.
Yes. So there's the extra two. I put down here.
How many factors are there from?
There's p factors in each.
Isn't there quite p plus 1 factor?
P plus down here?
Yeah.
Right, that's why there's one left over.
Yes, but shouldn't we take p plus 1 of 2 from there?
Oh.
Question in number.
It should be p plus 1/2 here. Okay. Thanks. Okay, and then let's look at the terms that do depend on x. So the terms that do depend on x are x plus 1 up through x plus p, x plus 1/2, x plus 3/2 up through x plus p plus 1/2, all divided by 2x plus 2 up through 2x plus 2p. And then we also have So here we're again dividing out the even and odd ones. And we get here. So again, this is a factor of 1 over 2 to the p from each of these terms. Here we also have a factor of 1 over 2 to the p for each of these terms. And we have one term left over, which is x plus p plus 1/2.
Where's t to the 2x?
T to.
And it's also the 2.
Yes, and there's also should be a 2 to the x. 2 to the 2x. And let's see. Okay. And if we combine our results, we get the gamma of x gamma of 2x gamma of 1/2 over gamma of x times gamma of x plus 1/2 is equal to the limit p goes to infinity of 2 to the 2x minus 1. These two p's cancel out. And we have an x plus 2p plus 1 over 2p plus 1. So this is equal to 2 to the 2x minus 1. Okay. So in total, we showed that gamma of x, gamma of x plus 1/2 is equal to the square root pi 2 to the 2x minus 1. Gamma of 2x.
How are we obtaining x plus 2p plus 1?
So, yes, it should be a 2. Yeah. Multiplied that by 2. Multiplied, yes.
And then the question, why is the power of 2 is 2 minus 1?
N minus 1. So here we have an extra p plus 1/2. Here. There should be one extra factor of 2. I missed a where? Do you see? Okay. I don't see immediately where the 2. I dropped the 2 somewhere. And this final result is correct. So. Okay. Yes.
When you wrote pi ap dpx.
Yes.
I don't see where the pi comes from.
The product. It's the product.
It's not
product.
I see. Oh.
The 2?
Yes. In denominator, less 1 of the product. And it gives you p plus 1.
Oh, yes. Great. Thank you. So there's one extra factor of 2 here. So it should be times 2. Thank you.
Should you have a 2 to 2x in the middle?
Well, I think
in AP,
you also put an extra part.
Which?
The one you
said. Half.
Two.
In
the
what, where?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, thank you. Okay. Okay, I think that's correct now. So just briefly in the last few minutes, I want to tell you a few things about the zeta function, be quick. So zeta function. So zeta of s is defined to be the infinite sum, and the minus s, the real part of s, is greater than 1. And so just by convention, the s stands for a complex number here. And this is equivalent this function is of interest to mathematicians also because it's related to prime numbers, but I'll skip that. So it's in fact can derive a very nice relation between the gamma and the zeta functions. So if we take gamma to be the integral from 0 to infinity, t to the x minus 1 times e to the minus t dt, we can make a change of variables. T equals ku, where k is a natural number. And if we do that, then we can write this as gamma of x times the integral from 0 to infinity of ku to the x minus 1, e to the minus ku times k du. And we can pull out a factor of k to the x. So we rewrite this equation as 1 over kx is equal to 1 over gamma of x times this integral. Then we see, in fact, that this looks very much like the we can then sum this, and if we do that, sum these terms, 1 over kx, k equals 1 to infinity, get 1 over gamma of x, that's the integral, 0 to infinity, u to the x minus 1, sum k equals 1 to infinity, e to the minus ku du. Now, over here, this is just a geometric series. So we have 1 over m of x, integral 0 to infinity, u to the x minus 1. This is just 1 over 1 minus e to the minus u du. And over here, we just have the zeta function. This is zeta of x. Each of these terms look like one of the terms in our zeta function.
Excuse me?
Yes.
On the right hand side, there should be additional factor of e to the minus u in the denominator because you're summing from 1, not from 0. Or if you multiply the whole thing by e to the plus u, you can write as 1 over e to the u minus 1.
E to the u. All right, this is correct.
But e to the power u or minus u
should be here. This should be u. Right.
It should be minus the whole thing, so that the would be
just
u to be or not.
They just cancel and give you.
You.
Yeah,
but the thing
down. No, this was correct as it was. That's right.
Oh, yeah, because it's right. It's k equals 1.
K equals 1. So that's why it's this form.
So it has to be positive.
Yeah, if we just add back the 0 term, you can show that this is give you what you would expect.
So it's plus.
And so that gives us a very nice relation between zeta and the gamma functions, just in terms of this integral. So I can write this also as e to the u minus 1. Yes. Yes. So.
In the last term, you
wrote
e minus 1 minus u. So they differ on the sign.
On the sign.
That's what I asked.
Oh, okay. So you're.
You have to subtract 1 in that fraction, and then you get.
Right, so we can just multiply. So from here to here, is that what you're asking?
I'm saying that
from here to here.
Row is, should have an additional minus.
An additional minus sign.
Before everything.
Here?
Yeah.
Because in the summatory, you have to subtract 1.
We'll add and subtract 1.
When you subtract 1, you subtract.
Did I miss a minus sign over
minus
here?
E minus exponential. So if you multiply by exponential, then you get 1 over e to u minus 1. That's minus.
Right.
When you just write the sum of geometrical progression, you obtain e minus 1.
Right.
In this case. So you change them, you get the minus.
Minus.
So it's sum of.
Okay.
This.
You're claiming there's an extra minus sign in this?
No, correct.
No, this is correct. Perhaps we can talk more about this after class. Okay, and that. Just one last thing to say. Okay. So the last.
Yeah, that's what it was. This is the same thing.
Last thing I'd like to tell you is just about hypergeometric functions. So really, you should mostly just be aware that they exist. And I'd like to define them. So the hypergeometric functions take 4 arguments. And they're defined in this way, just as an infinite sum here. Gamma plus a plus n, b plus n, Okay, so all of the special functions, so we can define these with arbitrary number of arguments. So F21 just means that it has two arguments here and one argument here. So note that these are separated by semicolons. So that just tells you how many gammas go upstairs or downstairs in this definition. So the 2-1 are just called the hypergeometric functions. If for any other number, those are called the generalized hypergeometric functions. And most of the functions that we know are generalized hypergeometric functions. In fact, all of the orthogonal polynomials that I've been telling you about for the last few lectures are either geometric, hypergeometric functions of this kind, the F2, F1s, or known as the confluent hypergeometric functions, F1. And so these, the F21s satisfy a general differential equation, z of 1 minus z, ddz, 2f1 plus c minus a plus b plus 1 of c, ddz of f21 minus ab 2f1. So a number of the difference equations you'll run across are of this form. And these functions actually simplify a great deal in many cases. So I guess I'm, So in the tutorial, you'll look at some examples of places where this these functions can be useful. You don't often need to know many of the properties of these, but it's just nice to be aware that they exist, because if you run across a differential equation and Mathematica tells you that the answer is a hypergeometric function, at least now you'll have some idea what they mean.
What about the confluent?
The confluent? So those satisfy a very similar differential equation. So the confluent ones are just defined with one fewer gamma function. So it would just be get rid of this term and get rid of this term. And it's not worth, in my opinion, memorizing the differential equation that they satisfy. You just might find one of these, and you can mathematical will tell you if the solution is one of these functions. Yes.
Like, is there one derivative that's going to be second order derivative?
Yes, sorry, second order. Thank you. Okay. Any other questions?
Satisfies
this differential equation. You can actually relate these to solve these differential equations by contour integration methods, which would be the subject of an entire other lecture if I went into that. So, but yes, I can recommend some reading, or we can talk about that later if you're interested in how these are. How you can use some contour integration methods to figure out which hypergeometric function you have.
Do we assume some relations between A, B, and C? Because it seems that if, for example, we take A and B large enough related to C, the series will diverge, no?
Series will. Yes. Yeah, so one thing to point out is that these are not unique if we, because of the relations between the gamma functions, we can change some of these arguments and we'll get the same function. As to whether it always converges, but if, yeah, you're right. I don't think it always converges. So, everywhere these functions will have poles sometimes. So for certain z and certain a, b, and c, that the sum doesn't always converge. Any other questions? Okay, thanks for your attention.